Hello and welcome to the Interior Design Business. This is Jeff Hayward and with my co-host, Susie Rumbold, past president of the British Institute of Interior Design and creative director of Tessuto Interiors, today we're exploring the changing face of workplace design.
Demographics in the UK mean that there will be an increasingly severe shortage of young employees, with businesses competing to attract and retain talent. Young millennials and Gen Z workers have definite ideas about what they need in a workplace, needs which employers ignore at their peril. So, what does the post-pandemic hybrid working office look like? Can co-working spaces provide a second option to working from home? And how does this new reality impact the design of office and co-working spaces? Welcome to the Interior Design Business.
Now we're delighted to welcome James White, co-founder of global interior design powerhouse MAWD, and May Forsey, founder and creative director of MF Design Studio, and May is also the president of the British Institute of Interior Design. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to meet.
So before we begin, can you both give us, please, a brief introduction to yourself, your company, and your expertise in workplace design? James, would you like to start?
Yes, yeah, so we're MAWD, March & White Design. We're a global interior design firm, started in London back in 2010, and we've expanded globally. We've got studios now in New York and LA, and we're opening soon in Dubai. So we work across sectors from residential, hospitality, but also increasingly over the last 5 years, commercial, co-working, workspace around the world. So I think it's given us a good insight of how the residential market is and how that interacts with workspace.
Fantastic. And May, what about you?
So I'm the founder and creative director of MF Design Studio. We've been running for the past 9 years and we specialize in commercial workplace interiors. So we are a boutique interior architecture studio and we specialize and focus on workplaces, whether they are end client workspaces or whether they are co-working spaces as well. So we work across the board. So seeing the trends change at the moment is very, very exciting. It's good to see how it all is changing as we go.
And workplace design in recent years has been dominated by the theory of activity-based working, or ABW, I think is the acronym that's popularly used. For the benefit of our audience, can you explain what this means and how it works?
Yep, it's basically choosing where you want to work, you know, and making sure that you have a workspace that's catered to your needs that allows you to work in the way that you'd like to.
So sort of a much more tailored kind of environment rather than just stick people in a generic amorphous kind of office.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Is he right there, May? Anything to add or is that spot on?
Totally. I think it's all about giving people the choice. This model allows people to choose the setting they want to work in, and if they have a quiet task, they tend to gravitate towards kind of quieter areas. And if they want to be in the heart of the buzz, then they perhaps sit in an open plan. And it's just, yeah, allowing people the choice. How would you like to take the task that you're doing? And what is the best setup to help you? So it's enabling people really to be more efficient and also encouraging people to move around rather than sit at one desk at one time all day, because it's not good for your health or well-being.
And the other thing that, of course, that are also in the ascendancy at the moment are co-working buildings. What do we actually mean by co-working and what form do these buildings typically take?
Yeah, they've been around for quite a while. I mean, we were working with the office group, I think going back to 2012. So it's, the idea of workspace, you know, and the members club kind of social element has, been around for quite a while. And I think what we kind of need to think about is maybe, you know, co-working space is it's workspace that's practical, it's functional, it's also got a social aspect, which the members club side does. But I think there's a sense of community that is in the building, you know, what kind of workspace it is. So I think that's probably where co-working has moved from initial forms. Yeah, there's now much more sense of community and tailoring space, and I think the amenities that you have within co-working space to the people that are actually in the building and the types of work that people are doing.
And what sort of amenities would you typically expect to find in a co-working space, May?
usually a great tea point that has got all sorts of brilliant coffee machines. I think coffee is the one thing that everyone agrees on, very important. Social spaces, collaboration spaces as well. So if you need to step away from the desk and have a chat with a colleague or have an informal meeting, having those kind of spaces. Supported by also an element of secure areas, quieter areas. So if you have a private confidential call that you would like to take, you can't take in an open plan. So perhaps you take yourself into one of those. So offering some meeting amenities, whether they are private or semi-private, offering some collaboration spaces and areas for people to interact, offering a really good tea point, coffee point sort of space where people can just have a drink or have lunch. And also there are all sorts now, I think everyone is competing and you're getting to see a lot more, as James said, community stuff. So things like yoga studios, gyms, all of those sort of fitness amenities as well are becoming quite important, and it helps make some stand more than others. And I think especially younger generation, this is an important aspect of the workplace. So they are looking at those kind of fitness studios, etc., attached to the space. And that becomes more of a good selling point, a unique selling point for the business.
And James, are these the same sorts of amenities that you would get in an ABW type office as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's also, when you focus on the types of tenant or the types of audience that you're looking to attract in terms of a community, yeah, obviously a more finance-driven or area location or types of tenant are going to be very different needs than creative or production. I think when you get, with the way technology's moved, that social's moved, the kind of production creative spaces start to put a different emphasis and shift on what co-working is and what some of these spaces are.
Hot desking and ABW were originally intended to make the workplace more fluid and productive. We've already discussed that. But I think they were also partly intended to create cost savings for the employer, as underutilized spaces would be eliminated from offices. Do you think that's worked?
So definitely there is efficiencies within the hot desking and ABW model. I prefer to call it desk sharing rather than hot desking. So when businesses are looking at this model, they know that they can have a smaller footprint because we don't have a ratio of 1-to-1 for employees versus desks. So that definitely allows a tiny bit more of a smaller real estate. Having said that, working with various clients over the years, I think what is happening is that we're reducing the footprint of desking and introducing more communal spaces, more collaboration spaces. So in a way, the efficiency is coming through creating more attractive spaces to get people back to the office. And that is especially post-COVID. So although you would expect an element of, oh, we're reducing the footprint dramatically because we're, let's say, a ratio of 0.6 desks to people, that doesn't seem to happen as such. It's not a very accurate mathematics to how it works. It's more of, let's create the space that people will like to come to the office to utilize. And that's definitely not a desk because you can do that at home. So that's definitely one aspect of it. But the other aspect is by creating those common spaces and by giving people the choice, you are basically trying to encourage the culture. And that's quite important. And I think the culture doesn't come with every individual person allocated a desk and sitting in his desk in his own department all day, every day. Whereas with desk sharing, you might end up sitting somewhere else where you are bumping into more colleagues, and at larger scale organizations, it's fantastic to kind of get people to talk and interact. And I think that's what every business is after, that interaction element. So yes, it has helped in various different ways. Maybe potentially not just the efficiency of the footprint, but an overall kind of efficiency in being more productive, being more interactive and collaborative.
Yeah, I think we're definitely seeing employers taking more floor space in order to provide amenities and not looking at smaller desk space. It's, as May was saying, it's giving more space back to everyone. And that doesn't mean you're necessarily saving space. You're adding space in many instances in order to accommodate some of these more social amenities, more relaxed ways of working, and more private ways of working. And then, thinking also about the people that are in the building, the tenants. A finance tenant's going to be a little bit different in terms of their needs and in terms of their social needs compared to a creative. So there's also, when you start thinking about working with clients and employers, is what types of amenities do we need to start bringing to the schemes?
Excellent. Okay. And since people became comfortable working from home, there's been well-documented reluctance by employees to return to the office full-time. Why do you think that is? And what's home providing that the office wasn't or isn't still? May?
Oh, biggest challenge, right? We come across that every single time we meet a new client and we talk about the brief. So what is the brief? Bring people back. And bring people back varies from different types of organizations, different types of teams as well. But of course, if you have been experimenting with and experiencing working from home for a long time, I think the reluctance is there. And we speak with a lot of our clients' staff, and we do a lot of workplace strategies just to see what is the desire to get back to the office. And full time, I think 5 days, I think we're well past that. I do not think many employers will have much luck with attracting people to go back 5 days a week. The hybrid model where you spend some time in the office and spend some time at home gives employees a lot of flexibility. It gives them a good life-work balance, which especially if they have families or younger children, it does offer that opportunity that you can still do both. You can still have a career, but at the same time, you can still drop off your kids to school and get back and do your work. So it is a hard sell if it's a 5 days a week. I think it made us all realize that actually there is efficiency in having people come back a few days a week, but not all. And also, as our tasks develop, you realize that there are certain days where you're on calls every day, or you do need to put your head down and do some quiet work. And these are fantastic days to stay at home and work from home, because you do not need to be surrounded by many people. And actually, if anything, if you are taking calls all day, every day, and you're in the office, you're disrupting absolutely everyone in the open plan, and you're not going to be too popular. So I think that element of mixing the two together, work from home and working from the office, is ideal. But it's also putting some pressure on employers to enhance their environment, so then people want to go back for those 2 days a week in the office or 3 days a week in the office. I think the old-fashioned office doesn't do it for anyone anymore, especially if you experience being at home, you know, in a very nice, your own environment, your own created environment with all the, you know, the design that kind of appeals to you. It's quite hard if you put people back and the office is not offering the same quality.
Mm. It has been a seismic shift, hasn't it, James?
Yeah, I think everybody wants the flexibility, and I think flexibility is fantastic. There's also, yeah, with that flexibility, there's a sense that you also need to be in the office at certain points. So having the ability to be in the office, to work from home and to move around is really important. But there's also developing that sense of culture in the office. And how do you do that when you can't get your teams in on the same days? So there's, for all employers, huge complexity, I think, that you see across, because everyone wants to give flexibility, but you also, you need to get the right balance. So I think we also need to think about younger generation as well. Often want to be in the office more, you know.
I was going to say that. I was just going to say, a lot of people's, not everyone's home environment is created equal. You know, if you're sitting in a lovely big house with a huge garden in Surrey and your own yoga studio and a double garage and blah, 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 you know, you can walk the Labrador at lunchtime and so on and unpack your online shopping or whatever you're doing. But if you're four kids jammed into a two-bedroom flat in Clapham, and everyone's trying to do Zoom meetings, that's not going to work, really, is it? So I wonder whether there's a generational divide, almost, going back to the point about younger employees, that we're seeing in this hybrid working pattern. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think with the younger people, I think, you know, there's that sense of mentoring and, you know, helps to develop the culture in the office as well, I think. So there's also, you know, as you just mentioned, yeah, it's the office. If it's attractive and if the amenities are great and people want to come in, that's really what we want to aim for through design. That's what we're here to do, to make spaces that people want to come to, want to spend time in, and think, actually, you know what? I don't want to stay at home today. I want to go in the office and do my work, meet my colleagues and, you know, have fun.
So you're recreating or imagining the office as destination. What about the impact of hybrid working on productivity? Are you getting a sense from clients that that's an issue? Or, again, does the design of the workspace need to work harder to make people as productive as they might be at home?
Measuring productivity is one of the hardest things. And you look at different organizations and how they measure productivity, that really varies. Some of them, it's all about the financial aspect. Some of it is about the retention, how much retention they're getting. Others are maybe the culture and how attracted people are to be together and come to the office. So I think if we rewind, if we go back to COVID times when we all proved that we can be very efficient and productive working from home, I think that was a great big bonus to the whole activity-based working scenario, because it gave employers the sense that I can give my staff more freedom. I can trust my staff. You know, we have been very efficient, and although everyone is working from home, there's a lot more of a trusting relationship between the employers and the employees. And I think that was a good turning point to enable the whole activity-based working model and the hybrid model. So moving from there to having kind of a hybrid activity of I work from home a couple of days or whatever it is, and then the rest of the week I work from the office, I think that helps people have a good work-life balance. And when you have a good work-life balance, you are in a better state of mind, you're not too stressed. And there are so many different researches on how stress impacts productivity very equally. So there's a direct relationship between stress and productivity. So if you have less stress levels, then you become a lot more productive, a lot happier. And I think that hybrid model enabled that a lot more. So people do feel that they have control over their own working week. They have a control over the work-life balance. They can get to the gym on the days maybe they are working from home at lunchtime, or do a run or walk the dog or whatever it is. And that kind of whole well-being piece behind the hybrid model, I think, enabled people to be slightly more productive, slightly more kind of satisfied in their roles. And that will definitely show a positive impact on the organization and how they measure their own success and how they measure their own productivity. But as an overall, I think it's a step in the right direction.
If staff are only coming in Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, but employers are paying rent for 5 days, is that sustainable? And what is the impact for workplace designers? Will it be smaller office spaces, spaces available on an ad hoc basis? How do we deliver value for our clients who are ultimately paying for the space, but still maintain this new flexibility?
Well, again, one of the biggest challenges I come across with every client I work with. So we are at the moment working with an organization who have two offices that we're kind of relocating them in London. We did a huge, big workplace strategy piece on how they approach this particular issue. Of course, people do not want to commute on Monday or Friday. Mostly Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, as you mentioned, Susie, these are the desired days. But again, with designing the office to suit desk sharing, we're designing the office to suit a certain number of people utilizing the office at this time. So for us to kind of say everyone comes in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we probably need the same amount of desks we would have needed if we were doing a one-to-one ratio. So it's a very common problem, and we're coming across it more often than we did in the past. And we're trying to kind of talk with our clients and maybe give them an education piece on, well, we really need to rotate teams. We really need to work with who is coming in the office and where, who do they want to meet? So what we tend to do is we do workshops with different departments. We understand what they need and their adjacencies as well. Who do they work with? And what we tend to do is we try and tailor the design early days to make sure that we know that team A, who is consisting of three different teams or whatever, are all coming to the workplace together at the same time. So therefore, we need to make sure that we've got the right number of desking. And then we do an internal piece with a client on, okay, how do we manage it? Because design is all great and you can kind of work with the design to suit the number of people. But I think there's an operational piece that the client has to buy into from day one, and they have to kind of start managing their own teams to communicate with them, right? Team A, you're coming in Monday, Wednesday. Team B, you're coming in Tuesday, Friday. And it is that kind of cooperation between staff and employers to make sure that we all make it work. And we kind of sit in the middle to liaise between the two. And often you find resistance if you are asking people to come in on a Friday. But by the same token, you are offering your staff flexibility. And I think to be flexible as an employer, you expect your staff to be flexible as well and kind of look at the working week as, okay, this is what I'm being offered, but by the same token, I'm staying at home a couple of days, so that's fair enough. So I think it is an operational piece from a client perspective. it is also a design piece from our perspective. I think putting the two together and trying to get to common grounds where we all understand how this office is going to operate, we all understand which teams are coming in when, enables us then to design it to the best efficiency. And that always goes a long way with staff and employers.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me, May, that the whole briefing process on what clients actually want has just got so much more complicated than perhaps it was 5 years ago.
Goodness me, of course it is.
Would you agree with that, James?
Yeah, definitely. It's I think that focus on, you know, the teams, the people in the building, understanding them better and making sure if you're going to create dedicated amenities and go to that expense for your team and to create a space that's great for them, you need to understand how they work, who they are, you know, what their needs are. And that's going to vary greatly depending on their backgrounds and industries. So, I mean, we've seen really big differences between, you know, doing a tech amenity space and a finance amenity space. Amazing projects, but you know, the types of amenities that you'll bring will just be a little bit different. You know, you're going to get in more of a tech space. There's kind of more out there amenities, much more wellness based. You know, bringing in more kind of sports activities. We've even got in one project a 5-a-side football pitch being brought in.
Wow.
You know, in design, you see so many different ideas that, you know, potentially come to projects.
And what about the recognition of well-being and how that's increased? The whole new emphasis there is on self-care. What's that doing in terms of how you approach design now for these new spaces?
So I this is a very, very close piece to my heart, well-being in the built environment in general. And it is becoming huge, big part of integral part of the brief with, you know, all clients that we're working with. And I think it is that realization that how staff health is important, or linking back to productivity and happier employees. And I think after pandemic, we all realized how important it is. During pandemic, I actually invested a bit of time because I wasn't really commuting. I wasn't doing my daily site visits and my daily client visits, etc. I had a lot more time on my hand. And I did my Well AP certification. So I kind of studied to take that exam. And it was a mind-blowing experience, eye-opener, really great, because it tells you all about how the space impacts people psychologically and physically as well. And I enjoyed it a lot. And I think now, seeing that clients are really keen on implementing some of those concepts into their design, something fills me with a lot of joy, because it means that people will become a lot happier, a lot healthier within their workplaces. And it creates the right environment. And that's all you need. You need an environment that looks after the people. And I think well-being is all about how to create happier and healthier workplaces. And that can be done in so many different varied ways. And there is a lot to implement, from very technically mechanical systems, water and air, freshness, and from a design perspective, the aesthetics, you know, encouraging people to take stairs, encouraging people to get up and move and not be at a desk the whole day. Fitness is huge, and providing those fitness suites and fitness studios, etc. And also classes. It's not just about creating the space. It's also creating that sense of community where employers are trying to bring in maybe some tutors to do some courses, Pilates or yoga is quite common. So there is a huge demand on well-being. It is something we discuss with our clients on every project. And whether they are aspiring to get a certification or not, we try and implement that as part of our good practice in our design intent. So we try and embed it within the design concept and make it like an integral part of the design that we are creating for our clients.
It's also something that landlords can help with, because, you know, when we come to projects, you know, they'll be in refurbished buildings or new buildings, there'll be some amenities provided by the landlord. But generally, particularly in London, a lot of schemes we have to provide on for amenities. And it's very difficult to provide wellness amenities and have your client pay for that for your staff. So I think landlords can help this by, you know, adding more wellness facilities into the amenities, by providing better amenities in the building, which then makes the building more attractive to tenants coming to take space. Because I think that accessibility to these facilities is super important. And And we've definitely seen in the US, there's, I think, more amenities put into the projects that, that we see. Whether it's because of the scale, I'm not sure, but there's generally always a fitness suite or a, you know, a co-working lounge or something that's provided by the landlord. So we're a big believer in when you're refurbishing buildings or looking at new opportunities, the improvement of that and to make the building more attractive is super important.
That's fascinating. And what about elements of what I would call home? So James, I know MAWG recently included a communal fireplace into one of your projects. And I thought
quite
that
a few, actually.
I love the idea. So what sort of, what other things like that have you been incorporating, sort of elements of home that you're bringing to the workplace?
I think, yeah, because we've got a background in residential design as well as hospitality, I think just creating seating groupings that feel comfortable. And that's the whole point behind the fireplace, the gathering element. It's when we put them into projects, even while they're on site, they've suddenly become the point where people stand around and have a meeting because, you know, there's just something, even if it's not a real fire, it's often we use vapor. I think in an office building, it just connects you to home that little bit more. Yeah, you're not necessarily going to stand there with a full wood burning fire, right? It's not possible. But you've just got that sense that, ah, there's a center point. And there's not that many things that you can bring. You can bring the fire, you can bring cafe kind of bar elements, social points, games areas, but you know, these focal points are things that are really nice to group seating around to make it feel a bit more homely.
May, what kind of things have you done that have brought home into the office?
Similar to James, I haven't done a fireplace. I'm very jealous. Maybe next project. Similar to
that's
James,
our trademark. Hang on.
We're kind of trying to implement softer aspects that you have at home in the office. We're trying to rely on some furnishings that aren't necessarily the same suppliers that we always use for the workplace. So we're trying to branch out and find other suppliers that where the sofa looks very domestic, where we have lighting. I think layers of light is something we like to play with a lot in the studio. And that is something you would have at home. And the whole idea of a very stark, bright, white 4000K lux type office to us sounds very alien. We prefer to kind of play around with the light hues and the light colors as well to make sure that we have warmer tones in certain parts. And you can dim the light, have control over the light and have some kind of different settings basically for your lighting. So we like to play a lot with light, and it is something that really enhances the environment massively. So you realize that, you know, the space is softer on the eye, the space feels more comfortable, and it's a feeling rather than something you see, which is really great. I always like to kind of play with the emotions within the design. But equally, I think one of the things that we started implementing a lot more, and it's something you would have at home, we started defining a mother's room in each and every project we do. And that mother's room is basically for female who were on maternity leave and then had to go back and they need a space to express milk. It is something that is not part of the UK British regulation at the moment. It is in the Dutch regulation, believe it or not. Every office has to have one of these. And we worked with a Dutch client recently. Well, I say recently, a few before COVID, and reading the regulations in Netherlands, we realized that this is an integral part of the regulation. You have to provide that. So then women going back to the workplace after, you know, maternity leave have got that space. So we started kind of creating that space and having a really nice kind of soft area that you can almost use to go and read a book as well. So we created those rooms, which we call meditation and mother's rooms, where you have a reading corner, a footstool, a really nice soft chair, and you can go and kind of tuck away from all the buzziness and the busyness of the office and have an area where you can actually relax and have a, you know, half an hour for yourself if you need it. So that's something, again, very home inspired rather than, and lots of curtains as well. I think that's the other thing. We put a lot of soft curtains, more than we ever did before COVID.
Interesting, interesting. And James, you've talked a bit about that sort of sense of community as well. I mean, are there other things that you can do to stop people feeling isolated, bring them together into that sort of communal sense of being part of a workforce?
I think it's through, you know, creating social spaces that feel hospitality linked. I think it needs to be the right setting for the type of workplace, but having that social element and something that really feels through the materials, through the, you know, the color choices, the fabrics that you choose, creating that something that takes you again out of the workplace and more into a home or hospitality setting.
How important are the use of sustainable materials and practices in design of co-working and office environments?
I mean, we've been experimenting a lot with materials in the projects that we've been doing. I think commercial space is really advanced because of the regulation requirements for new offices. And, you know, from an interior design perspective, industry is, I think generally there's an emphasis obviously towards materials. People haven't always thought about where they come from, and that's like number one now. Well, where's it sourced? How does it contribute to the building? We're now looking at making sure furniture is well approved and contributes to the building overall. We've also been plugging our furniture collection, but we've just created a conscious furniture collection which achieves that, you know, through WELL certification. And bringing sustainable materials and having a focus on, you know, recycled materials, materials that are well sourced is one of the key things I think in commercial design that is really excelling at the moment. And I think it's leading all the other sectors and starting to inform other things that we're doing across residential. So really important.
May, anything to add?
Yeah, so very similar to James. I think it's a huge big part of the brief we're getting. It's a huge big agenda we have that we push against our clients as much as we could to give them the choice, basically. But I think as a studio, what we've tried to do is we try to look at all of the finishes and materials we are using, find out more about how they're being made and the recyclable content of them and how sustainable they are in the, you know, end of life as well. But I think predominantly our approach to design is to design schemes that last. And I think that longevity is a huge big part of sustainability. So we're trying to kind of work with our clients, not to be kind of on a particular trend, but design something that would last them the least. And every finish we put in, we make sure it is not just hard wearing to take them through the least time, but also is easy to recycle or easy to reuse after the end of life. So that's kind of part of what we try and do as part of our standard process or procedures to designing. And also, of course, you know, a lot of clients come to us with BREEAM requirements, SCAR requirements. We've got a couple of projects that we're working on at the moment in the studio that are aspiring to achieve BREEAM excellent. And that kind of pushes us in a way. It pushes us to try and find the right spec and maintain the design quality and maintain the aspiration of the design that we were after, but kind of trying to look through all those different suppliers and really understand how they make their products, which it's a great piece. It's a great thing to be involved in as part of the design process and helping clients kind of achieve certification as well. It's great. And the things you have to look for. And I think we had a project where we were asked to look for taps that comply with BREEAM, and my goodness, the level of detail you get to on that tap. The amount of water it uses, the efficiency, etc. And it's just a really great field that you can really find yourself completely lost within, because it can take over your whole time. You have to be very careful, but very important, definitely important in the schemes and important with our clients as well.
But I also imagine that it would be massively appealing to people's employees too. You know, for younger employees to be able to say that they're working in a truly sustainable office and it's cool, and you know, that's something else surely that will enable employers to have that appeal to younger workers.
It's a great unique selling point. It's a great attraction point, especially for the younger generation. They do ask about it. And there's a lot of synergy between well-being and sustainability, even from a certification perspective. So a lot of the practices you would do for sustainable certification would enable the well-being and enhance the well-being. So in a way, they go hand in hand. And therefore, of course, they are quite important. And they present as a unique selling point for businesses.
Yeah, you've also got, you know, we try and use recycled materials in our projects, but we often use them in key elements that become talking points because they're actually quite expensive finishes. It's almost like going back a few years, specialist finishes, beautiful to add to a project, always a talking point. But we now look at how can we use recycled materials that maybe give that little bit of something extra and also help support some of the suppliers, you know, creating these things that are going to contribute to the industry for the future.
And presumably biophilic elements are huge as well following the pandemic. So have you seen an uptick in that kind of application, May?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I always disliked the lonely pot in the end of the meeting room in the corner, I have to say. I was never a big fan. And it was a task to try and encourage clients to do it differently. But now it's very easy. You kind of present a scheme. They expect plants to be an integral part of it. So it's happy days for me, for sure.
Same for you too, James?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you are going to have a pot in the corner, make sure you've got several and they're nice pots.
Yeah, I agree. But,
yeah.
Is the living wall still a thing, or is that a bit of a cliche now?
Outside, well, I think the connection between inside and outside is always something to promote even more, and can often give you even more of a sense. You know, if a landlord can create a small terrace area, a small outside area, maybe just a visible element of greenery from the building can be really important to the interior space.
I'm going to ask, we like to put in a bit of a mad question at the end of these things. So in terms of amenity spaces or any other spaces, what is the maddest, most eccentric, most memorable thing that either of you have ever incorporated into one of your co-working or workplace schemes?
We've put hammocks before and kind of trying to get the hammocks to be suspended from the ceilings was, oh God, we needed a structural engineer to put the hammocks in. And that's the last thing you would expect. We just wanted a few hammocks in the space. And then it was a building in Canary Wharf, and the landlord in Canary Wharf is always very stringent with what can and cannot be done in the buildings, quite rightly. So my goodness me, the structural loading, how heavy are the people using the hammocks? And for the sake of a few hammocks, we've done a very good research. So if you need to know any more about hammocks, I'm your guy.
I'm Wilma girl. Okay, perfect. Thank you, James and May, so much for your time today. That has been the most fascinating conversation, truly.
Yeah, really great discussion. Thank you both so much. Really enjoyed listening to all of those stories. So thank you both for your time today. We do hope you've enjoyed this episode, and please do get in touch on our social channels at Interior Design Business Pod to share any feedback. The Interior Design Business is a Wildwood Plus production.